This podcast is marketing material for a South Africa investment professional only.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our monthly Global Markets Perspective podcast for South African investors. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Sebastian Mullins, who's Deputy Head of Multi-Asset Australia. And Sebastian and I will be discussing a number of topics ranging from global economics to markets. Sebastian, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Gandhi. Appreciate it.
Great. Sebastian, I suppose the first place to start would be inflation and recession seem to be the words of the day. Could you provide our listeners with an update on the current state of the global economy?
Sure. Thanks, Gandhi. I guess the main thing that happened most recently has been the headline CPI or CPI print in the US this month, which has really sort of made markets and particularly people watching the economy start to question the narrative of whether inflation is rolling over, and if so, where does it get to? So for example, the headline CPI this month was 8.3 versus expectations of 8.1, but probably more surprising was core CPI rose to 6.3 when people were actually expecting it to fall to 5.75. So pretty big miss there in core. And what we saw was that things like shelter, food, medical care being the largest contributors. So it's no longer just, you know, supply chain issues or energy related issues, which was, I guess, the narrative of the past. And if you look at things like the trimmed mean, which essentially takes out the largest increases or decreases, tries to look for the median amount of inflation, it rose to a new high of 7.2%, well above the peak we saw in the 1980s to 90s, where it got to 5.1. So we're seeing large increases in inflation and it's being broad based. To put in perspective, if you look at the basket right now of all the underlying components within the CPI basket, 93% of them are above 4%. So I guess the market's expectation of, you know, supply chains being fixed, the war in Ukraine or the energy crisis coming to an end and having inflation magically fall back down to 2% is now being challenged again. So we believe that inflation is going to be more sticky, is going to be a bit higher than longer than expected by the market at least. And that means the Fed and central banks globally have to be more hawkish. And the problem is they have to remain more hawkish just to the point when the economy might be rolling over. So many people say that, you know, the economy looks quite strong, especially in the US. If you think about wage growth numbers, they're some of the best we've seen in many years, or even, you know, it's probably the best we've seen post-GFC, if not even before then. So very strong wage growth and very strong job openings. So people are saying the US economy is very strong given how resilient the US consumer is and that a soft landing is likely. But if you think about that, job openings are kind of a lagging indicator. And you saw very, very strong job numbers during all three of the 1970s recessions. So given its lagging indicator, it's a bit misleading to focus purely on that, especially when you've seen some things like, for example, PwC came out with a report recently stating that 50% of corporates are looking to cut jobs in the next 6 to 12 months. So potential for redundancies coming through. And also, if you look at job growth and wage growth in particular, you know, wage growth is strong, but inflation is even stronger. So if you think about real income or real disposable income, it's never been worse. If you look at the chart of real disposable income in the US, it's pretty much the lowest it's ever been. And that chart goes back to 1947. So in real terms, the consumer is doing quite poorly, despite being paid a lot more in nominal terms. And that's why you're seeing consumer sentiments being quite poor. In fact, it's the lowest it's been since the 1970s. And you've seen consumers spend all their excess savings. You've seen personal savings rate back down to 2009 levels. You're also seeing credit card debt explode higher. It's the highest year-on-year increase in credit card debt in 20 years. So effectively, we see a consumer getting paid more, but falling behind in real terms, spending all their savings, and now relying on debt to fund their way. So we do believe the economy is rolling over. The Fed are hiking into a downturn. And if you believe in a soft landing, just remember that the last 14 rate hike cycles, 11 ended in recession. So it seems very unlikely, the track record is quite poor, that they'll manage to do a soft landing this time around.
Yeah, very sobering picture there, Sebastian. So I mean, I want to touch on the point that you made early on about the current tightening cycles coinciding with the current poor economic environment. I mean, is this just a case of central bankers effectively saying, look, recession or perhaps deep recession is just the outcome of the tough decisions they have to make. It's just something that we're going to have to live with. Is that effectively where we're going here?
Well, it's a good point because, you know, people have been thinking the Fed will pivot when the economy starts to crash, and central banks globally, I should say, will pivot when the economy starts to crash. But you've seen Powell come out most recently in the last press conference saying, effectively, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but a recession might be the price we have to pay to bring inflation down. So they're really highlighting that effectively getting price stability, which is inflation, down is their number one priority. Forget about employment for now. Forget about market stability. Bringing inflation down is their number one priority, regardless of the cost. Now, whether they actually do that when, you know, you're actually seeing unemployment rise, et cetera, that is a question mark. But for now, that is definitely what they're saying. And if you think about that, it's every central bank is now fighting inflation. They're raising rates aggressively. So it's a synchronized hiking cycle. And if you think about previous downturns, say the GFC, for example, because COVID was, you know, a bit of an exogenous shock. But the GFC, you had China stimulating pretty aggressively. You had emerging markets sort of beating to their own drum. So it wasn't a complete synchronized recession, whereas this time around, it seems like it might be. And we've only really talked about, you know, rate hikes. And while those are pretty aggressive, if you think about it, the US, it's pretty much the fastest tightening cycle, the most aggressive tightening cycle post-Volcker. Obviously, Volcker was far stronger. But since then, this is the fastest and hardest cycle we've seen so far. You've seen people like Sweden Riksbank hiking 100 basis points earlier in the month. You've seen, you know, places like Europe and Switzerland now actually have positive cash rates. So there has been a large hiking cycle globally. But on top of that, we haven't really started to see the effect of balance sheet reduction. And for us, that's the next pretty important point to watch. Because if you think about that, that's also being pretty aggressive. Because if you think about the last, you know, the history is pretty slim on this. I mean, the last, we've only had one quantitative easing cycle and one quantitative tightening cycle to look at in history. And effectively, the last time we had QT, they started at $10 billion per month. And it took them a whole year to raise that to $50 billion a month, $50 billion a month. This time around, we've gone effectively from zero at the start of the year. And this month, we're ratcheting up to $95 billion. So effectively double the maximum of what we saw in 2018. And $50 billion a month in 2018 was enough to cause some pretty serious market dislocations. So right now, we're having double that, far faster than we saw before, and also with a very, very aggressive hiking cycle. So I do think, you know, they're showing, for now at least, that they're serious about bringing down inflation, no matter what the cost.
Sebastian, I want to talk about the impact on markets of all of this negative news and how much of it has already been priced in. But perhaps before getting there, just pivoting to the currency markets. I mean, we've seen obviously the dollar strength that you've been alluding to. The pound has kind of fallen out of bed. And we've seen the Bank of Japan come to market to support the yen by selling dollars. Can you just unpack this element for us from a currency markets perspective?
Sure. Well, it's been interesting because if you think about global macro for the past couple of years, a couple of decades, FX has been very boring. And for the first time in a while, now FX is interesting again. And you're seeing volatility jump pretty dramatically in FX markets. And the big story this year, of course, is the US dollar being extremely strong. So if you think about the DXY, that's, you know, a trade-weighted basket mainly of the euro, yen, and other currencies. That hit a high of around 114 this year, which effectively is a 19% rise year on year. And the US dollar is also known as the wrecking ball. You know, it comes in, and when dollar rallies really hard, it can really affect markets and affect economies. So I guess the question is, you know, why is that happening this year? Why is the US dollar so strong? And I guess most of it can be attributed to yield differentials. You know, I just mentioned how aggressively the Fed has been hiking and how fast they've been hiking. If you think about US cash rate now, you can get like 4% on a one-year T-bill. So interest rate differentials has caused US dollar to rally quite strongly. But also you're seeing a reduction in liquidity and a flight to safety in a way, which pushes the US dollar higher even more. And you're seeing, you know, some crisis in emerging markets or in some frontier markets where, you know, effectively the search for dollar liquidity is being pretty strong. So that's another catalyst to push it higher. You mentioned the yen and the pound, and of course they've been moving in the opposite direction. And if you think about why, well, I guess the Japanese yen is in an interesting position where Japan is the only central bank, Bank of Japan, that's maintaining their pretty loose monetary policy. They're keeping rates anchored. They haven't raised rates yet. They're still doing balance sheets, yield curve control, which means their balance sheet will continue to rise. So they're effectively still doing QE when the rest of the world is doing QT and raising rates. So naturally, the yield differential there will cause the yen to fall. And that's what we've seen. The pound has been interesting, especially the last couple of days. And, you know, it's almost a joke, but I remember, I think it was Gabe Kell or another research provider made a joke a year or two ago saying, in the coming year, 2022, you should fire all of your developed market analysts and promote your emerging market analysts, because we're going to start seeing balance of payment crises across the developed world. And well, we saw that now with Bank of England, because effectively, you've seen a classic balance of payments crisis occurring in the developed market economy. You know, a situation where everyone's been selling UK assets, whether it be Brexit or just proximity to Europe, or even, you know, issues with Ukraine in its region, but people have been selling UK assets. And at the same time, you're seeing a new government come in and effectively point to higher deficit spending. And the deficit spending, you know, they're not talking about building bridges, they're talking about tax cuts for the rich funded by issuing more gilts. So in a typical emerging market balance of payments crisis, you have to fund your deficits from somewhere, and that's usually from foreign investment. And if foreign investment don't want to invest, then the price of the currency or the yield on the bond adjust until it's attractive enough to find that foreign investment. And right now they haven't found that level yet. So we're seeing the pound fall dramatically, and we're seeing yields rise on UK gilts pretty dramatically. So watch this space, but it seems to be the first developed market that's leading into a balance of payments crisis, which is pretty interesting.
Interesting indeed, Sebastian. So as I said, you've painted a bit of a sobering picture here. How much of this has already been priced into markets? I mean, if you look at global equities, they've now fallen sort of 25% odd peak to trough. Surely this negativity is priced in.
You'd hope so, but we don't think we're there yet. I mean, obviously 25% correction is a large correction, and it does put it into the bear market camp. And if you think about previous recessions, you know, 25% to 35% is typically how much markets do fall. So you could say that, you know, we're pretty far well through this. But for us, unfortunately, we don't think we are, because essentially all we've seen this time around is a very expensive market. I'm talking about the US in particular here, given it's, you know, 60% of global equities, re-rating downwards just to match the repricing of interest rates and inflation. So if you think about, you know, PE ratios or price to earnings ratios, the trailing PE ratio the last year or two got up to 30 times, which is very, very high. And it's now come down in trailing PE to 18 times, which is a big improvement in valuations, but isn't really screaming value just yet. But if you look at the forward price to earnings ratio right now in the S&P, it's at 16 times. And for us, 16 times PE is actually consistent with an inflationary regime of around 4% and rates around the same level, which is what we have today. So based on just the PE re-rating downwards to match the inflation and the yield environment, we think that's fairly valued. The problem is that assumes that the earnings multiple is correct. And for us, we do have some questions around that. Now, 16 isn't as low as it can get, obviously. If you think about the 1970s, the PE oscillated between 5 and 10. So, you know, if inflation stays very high or gets to the teens, like you saw in the 70s, then PE can come down a lot further. But if you assume that we could normalize at around a 4% inflation, you know, next year or so, then 16 is adequate. But earnings expectations are still pretty strong. You know, they're being downweighted a bit. You've seen earnings revision come through the last few months, but effectively earnings are still expected to be single digits this year and high single digits the next 2 years thereafter, off a very strong base of last year, which was, you know, a huge amount of positive earnings. We believe, based on our models, that earnings should probably fall to negative 10 to 15%, which means while the PE ratio is correct, the E has further to fall. So if you assume that PE ratio of 16 is correct and should stay there, and you bring the earnings down by, say, 10 to 15%, then you're looking at fair value on the S&P anywhere between 3,500 to 3,200, which is kind of like, you know, say an 8 to 15% correction from here. So we don't think we're through it yet, Obviously, the PE ratio has improved, but we think earnings is the next shoe to drop in this story.
Yeah, thanks, Sebastian. So in addition to sort of earnings going forward, if we are now pivoting towards your future, or I suppose your outlook on economies and markets, what are the key variables beyond earnings that you guys are looking at the moment?
That's a very good question, because obviously I've given a pretty bearish outlook today. So the big question for us then is, you know, when do you start to become more positive and when do you start to buy back in? And I think a lot of our clients are asking themselves that same question. So for us, obviously the big important story that we started this conversation with is inflation. So if inflation does start to roll over meaningfully, then that gives central banks and the Fed in particular some cover to either stop hiking aggressively or, you know, very optimistically start to cut rates, which is not our base case. But if we do start to see inflation roll over and the Fed starting to pivot, then of course that would be a positive sign to reinvest. At the same time, if we do see earnings hold up to be more robust than we predict, then that would be another reason to start to become a bit more bullish. And of course, looking at actual economic indicators to see if you see any upturn in activity, that would be one to watch. But right now we're seeing those turn down. We have actually looked at, you know, creating a checklist of, you know, when do you think a bear market bottom is in place? Some brokers have their own that you can look at. But effectively, things you normally see at a bear market bottom include, you know, the Fed cutting rates. We're not there yet. Starting to see valuations improve dramatically, which we've sort of seen, but not a huge amount. As I said, there's probably more to go if earnings get re-rated down. There are things like the rule of 20, which is a bit obscure, but that's a rule that states that if you take the market PE, add inflation to it, that number should be below 20, and that's a positive buy signal. Also looking at, you know, on the two-year US Treasury bond, when yields start to fall down on that, again, that's a monetary policy indicator. These are the kind of things we're not seeing yet, but we are looking out for them. And if you think about previous bear market bottoms, if you have a list of, say, 20 indicators, typically around 80% of those will flag at a bear market bottom. We're about 40% today, so we're not quite there yet. But we definitely are watching those kind of indicators to change our mind.
Sebastian, before we close out, I'm keen to get a sense of how you guys are currently navigating this environment. As a multi-asset portfolio manager, at the end of the day, you guys are managing money on behalf of our clients. How are you guys currently positioned from an asset allocation perspective? Are there specific regions that you like, regions that you're staying away from? And broadly speaking, are you more in the defensive versus growth mindset? Could you maybe elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Thanks, Gandhi. I guess given the outlook, you know, we're pretty bearish and pretty bearishly positioned. But because we have our process, you know, we look at valuations, we look at where we are in the cycle, we look at the liquidity profile. We were lucky enough to de-risk pretty aggressively end of last year, early this year. So we cut our equities in half by, say, February this year, with most of it at the end of last year. So that at least gives us an opportunity to watch a bottom form and maybe miss the first bit of the rally because we've, you know, stayed away from most of the drawdown. So in terms of where we're positioned, I mean, to be honest, we do have a lot of cash right now, because even though people say, you know, cash is losing in real terms, that's true, but at least it's giving you a positive return, and it's giving you a pretty strong positive return right now compared to the past. You know, as I said before, you're getting between 3-4% in US bills right now compared to zero only a few months ago. So we do have a lot of cash. We do think certain credit markets are interesting. So global high yield by itself, if you look at spreads, they're only at about neutral in terms of valuations, which aren't too attractive given our view on recession. But in investment grade markets, spreads look a lot wider, look a lot cheaper. Some of them actually pricing in a recession already, like Europe, for example. So we do like investing in IG credit. There are some lower duration credits that we do like, or floating rate, higher yielding assets. So we do try and have some alternative forms of yield in the portfolio. But thinking about major asset classes, mainly we're overweight cash, underweight equities, and more neutral on sovereign bonds. Because for us, if we do believe there is a recession, duration should rally. But because we're still uncertain about the path of inflation, it might be a bit too early to get too optimistic on duration. So probably neutral duration, underweight equities, overweight cash, and select investments in credit markets.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Sebastian. Maybe just in conclusion, key takeaway points for our investors here, and I'm hoping that there's a healthy dose of a silver lining in your response.
Yes, of course. I guess the key message is, you know, inflation is the key regime shift. It's causing central banks to effectively fight to bring asset prices down. So if you don't want to fight the Fed, you know, stay out of their way right now. So make yourself as small a target as possible during this regime shift. However, that said, as that goes on, you're actually rebuilding risk premia for the first time in over a decade. So for us, while this period is painful, it's actually very optimistic from a long-term investment standpoint. Once you get through this, you know, you're seeing yields, you know, well above zero, you're seeing cash rates return, you're seeing spreads widen quite significantly, and you are seeing equity multiples improve. So if you have a 10-year view, valuations are improving across the board. We think they can go further, so we're not buying yet, but that re-rating will set you up for the next decade of returns. And just looking at credits, you know, what you can get on most credit assets are almost double, if not 2.5 times what you're getting just a year ago. So there's definitely a rebuilding of risk premia, but for now, keep yourself defensive, keep yourself safe, and then look for that point to redeploy to set yourself up for the next decade of returns.
Fantastic. I think that's a great place to stop. Thanks very much for your time, Sebastian. Really appreciate your insights.
Thanks, Gandhi. Appreciate it.
Sebastian Mullins, Deputy Head of Multi-Asset Australia. Thanks very much for joining us for another Global Markets Perspective podcast. We hope you found the content useful. Looking forward to chatting to you again next month.
The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance and may not be repeated. Schroders Investment Management Limited is an authorised financial services provider. FSP number 48998, registration number 01893220, incorporated in England and Wales. The information is not an offer, solicitation or recommendation. Any funds, services or products mentioned might not be appropriate for all listeners. Please speak to a financial advisor if you are unsure as to the suitability of any investment.
The forecasts included are not guaranteed. They are provided only as at the date of issue and should not be relied upon. Our forecasts are based on our own assumptions, which may change. We accept no responsibility for any errors of fact or opinion and assume no obligation to provide you with any changes to our assumptions or forecasts. Forecasts and assumptions may be affected by external, economic or other factors.